Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to the Chemist Corner Podcast for Thursday, April 26, 2012. Welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, formulator, instructor, and according to Google, the best euchre player in the world. Yay! Chemist Corner is a podcast dedicated to teaching people about cosmetic science, formulating, and how to become a cosmetic chemist. All opinions expressed in Chemist Corner are those of the hosts and the guests alone. They do not represent those of any past, present, or future employers. Well, we're back with another episode about the wonderful world of cosmetic chemistry. In today's show, we have an interview with industry expert Steve Herman about the FDU Cosmetic Science Program and some upcoming events from the New York SCC. But before we get to the interview, let's talk about some recent cosmetic science stories that have been in the news. Here's a story about whale barf. Whale barf is no longer needed to make high-end perfume. One of the interesting things about cosmetic ingredients is that many have been used for hundreds of years, and many of these ingredients were used before the science of synthetic chemistry was developed. These natural substances often came from plant or animal sources, and they've been steadily replaced by more consistent synthetic versions. One of these ingredients was ambergris, was an expensive perfume ingredient made from aged and weathered whale vomit. Ambergris is not necessarily useful for its odor, but rather the molecules are perfect for perfumes because they are both heavy and lipophilic, which means they're going to bind to the fatty molecules like fragrances, and they're going to help them stay on the skin. So the weight of these molecules helps the perfume stick to the skin and give it a longer lasting characteristic. The lipophilic property essentially ensures that the perfume sticks together, which makes the perfume last longer. Well, perfumers now have a plant-based alternative. In the cosmetic industry, there's a movement away from animal-derived ingredients. They have a plant-based alternative, which is made from a modified balsam fir tree. Scientists were able to create an ingredient that had the same effect of ambergris, so this means that there will be no more whale vomit needed to make these high-end perfumes. There you go, progress in the cosmetic raw material industry. Now I just wonder, what will happen to all the leftover whale vomit? In our second story, researchers have found that optimistic consumers are more likely to trust salespeople. According to a study published in one of my favorite journals, the Journal of Consumer Research, I don't know how scientific the Journal of Consumer Research is because it seems very difficult to control things, but there's a journal about consumer research. Anyway, in this study, consumers who believe that the world is just and fair, they end up trusting salespeople more than people who are pessimistic. One study that they did looked at the way people felt about salespeople before and after they made a choice of what type of camera to buy. Consumers who were optimists were found to trust the salespeople more after purchasing the camera than they did before. Pessimists didn't change their feelings of the salespeople. Researchers also found that optimists were more happy with their purchases after they bought. Just one of the advantages of having a sunny disposition, I guess. All this is to say it's better to sell to optimists than pessimists, or at least it's better to use salespeople to sell to optimists. This is certainly something to consider when you're gathering consumer research for your product development efforts. If there is a pessimist in your consumer research mix, you may be able to discount slightly the information they provide about products because it might be biased, or they might not be trusting into your marketing messages. Just one of the interesting vagaries of consumer research. The other thing about this story is you should take a look at the Journal of Consumer Research because there's some interesting things about consumer behavior. Our final story is about tanning. According to a new press release from the InCosmetics, pale is the new tanned. The consumer research group Mintel reports that face care products that contain UV protection rose from 13% in 2008 to 19% in 2011. So that means manufacturers are just adding UV protection to face cares in a much higher level, which means that consumers want more UV protection from their face products. Perhaps people are finally getting the message that UV exposure is not only bad for your skin, but it also leads to accelerated aging. And while tanning has been popular in Western countries, wrinkles have never been in style. Now that people have discovered the UV aging connection, look for more pale faces in the future. Or maybe there will be a greater demand for those sunless tanning products. We'll just have to wait and see. Steve Herman is the principal at PJS Partners, where he consults on technical formulating, regulatory, and marketing for the cosmetic and personal care industry. He is an adjunct professor in the Fairleigh Dickinson University Cosmetic Science Program and is the 2012 chair-elect for the New York SCC. He's also a returning guest on Chemist Corner. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thank you. How you doing?
I'm good. It's always great to have you on here. How are things out there on the East Coast?
The sun is shining, unlike yesterday, but it's not spring-like right now.
Indeed.
We had spring and summer during the winter, and now we're back to the winter and the spring.
This is the way the weather is these days. It's very odd.
Yes, we don't have climate anymore. We just have weather.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on, as always. We brought you on the program today to discuss a couple of different topics, including some of the recent changes at the FDU Cosmetic Science Program and some of your upcoming events at the New York SCC. How about we start off with the FDU program first? Could you just tell us about the FDU Cosmetic Science Program and what's going on with it?
Okay. First of all, the FDU program is probably the oldest program of its type in the world, and it's really a world leader in cosmetic education. It goes back to the early 1980s, and at that point was unique because it was in a chemistry department. A lot of people who gained experience in cosmetic-related subjects went to like a pharmacy school, and the pharmacy school, because they do drug delivery and skin physiology, but kind of roll things into cosmetic applications. But the Fairleigh Dickinson program was structured differently from the beginning, partly because the New York SCC was part of the formation of the program from the beginning and contributed a lot of the teachers to the program, because almost all the people who teach are adjuncts and they come out of the local SCC. So it was originated in a different way, it's structured in a different way, and then it was meant to draw a lot of students from the cosmetic industry that surrounds us here, because we are in, you know, basically the hub of the cosmetic and fragrance industry in North Jersey.
Yeah.
And we went chugging along like that for a long time. For administrative and bureaucratic reasons, it was an MA program for a very, very long time. And it's got nothing to do with the nature of the courses that we teach, but just getting programs through the higher education system in the state and dealing with other schools. It was bureaucratic educational stuff rather than what the program actually dealt with. But we still always wanted it to be an MS program.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 years ago, we were finally able to make that change. It's more psychological and practical at the moment. Really, the curriculum has essentially stayed intact, and everyone who was in the program was just glided into getting an MS rather than an MA. But as part of the subtle changes in the program, we instituted an independent study component, which I have been teaching. Now, there's different kinds of universities. Some of them are research universities, like Columbia or Cornell or Johns Hopkins, where there's a lot of research money that comes in. And Fairleigh Dickinson is not like that. It's a teaching university, and there's
mm-hmm.
very little in terms of research that goes on in the school in the sciences. And for me to take over an independent study student without a lot of laboratory equipment or lab space would have been difficult. So I took a different approach of using computer programs and literature searches and studies to look at weak forces, basically solubility parameters. And so we bought a program called Hansen Solubility Parameters in Practice, which we started working with last year. And this year we bought the late Johann Vieker's program formulating for efficacy.
Right.
So I get my students to come and review, first of all, the subject of what's involved in weak forces, solubility parameters, water octanol, partition coefficients, even things like required HLBs. There's a lot of things that don't involve regular chemistry, covalent and ionic bonds. They involve more of what happens because of van der Waals forces, which you don't study in normal chemistry, but really affect how liquids mix together and how cosmetic formulas actually work, you know, if you look at it from the most basic level. So I'm now on my fourth consecutive student working with the programs, looking at the big literature going back to the early 1900s
mm-hmm.
on solubility parameters, and hopefully writing some papers about it. The first thing that we actually published was in the December Cosmetoscope, the New York chapter's newsletter. So anybody who is interested, if you do go online, and it's www.nyscc.org, the Cosmetoscope has an archive. If you go back to December, there's the article on weak forces that I did with two of my students. So that's the first fruit of working an independent study.
We'll definitely keep a link to that in the show notes here. One question about that independent study and the program in general. At the end of it, are students required to do a master's thesis or something like that?
No. You just need 32 credits. It's sometimes the way courses cycle through, and we have a lot of foreign students come, and they have to keep a certain course load to stay in the country legally, and they want to get in and out as quickly as possible, just because of practical reasons sometimes. And we have to sometimes insert another option for them to get two or three credits. And that's one of the reasons that this independent study arose. Another reason that was that some students specifically wanted to do some study. But it's not a requirement right now. And it's something we may be looking at in the future, but not at the moment. Okay, another thing that's really moved along lately is the intern opportunities that the students have been getting. A couple weeks ago, one of my students came to me and she said, "I have a problem." And I said, "What?" Well, she says, "I have two opportunities to be an intern and I don't know which to take." And she said, "Well, one of them is working in a Givaudan fragrance studio in New York City, and the other one is to work at L'Oreal." And I'm like, "What a problem you have. I'm so sorry." And she was really worried, like, "What do I do?" And I had to say, you know, what are you most interested in? Not how much money you're going to make, not what they're offering you at the second. What do you love? And she loved fragrance. And I said, you know, go to Givaudan. Then I had an email from Colgate-Palmolive. They were looking for undergraduate interns from Fairleigh Dickinson. I've handed those over now to a career development department that the school has. And a month ago, we took what was like a field trip to the Givaudan fragrance labs in New York City and spent about 3 hours there. They did a marketing presentation, took us through the labs, showed us how the fragrances were made, the types of stability that they did. And then they took applications for internships. And they are very actively seeking students to go work during the summer. They're assigned a project. They have to give a presentation at the end. It's very structured. And from the point of view of the students, of course, it's a great opportunity to gain experience. From the point of view of a Givaudan or a Colgate, they're getting access to new graduates. They get to essentially give them some training and then test their performance. And so we have a pretty good system going on right now to be working with the local companies. And I had another student last year who got into a training program at IFF. So the students who are in the program, if they don't have jobs right now, are getting opportunities to go into big companies, at least get some experience.
It sounds like one of the great reasons to go through this course is, of course, you're learning everything, but you're making connections with the industry and getting a high probability of landing a job when you're done.
Yes, and they have, and actually another thing is the friendships they have with the other students, because that group is going to be moving with them through the industry for the next 20 or 30 years. And they actually have some pretty strong friendships among the students that I think is very healthy.
Yeah, well, that's excellent.
Now, the other thing I'm doing with them, and it segues into the other discussion we want to have, is I'm getting some of my students involved in the local SCC chapter. I've taken a former student, put her in charge of seeking posters for a technology transfer conference, and I just plucked a student out of my class right now to help on that committee.
Well, that's right. Now, let's remind the listeners that you are the incoming chair-elect for the New York SCC this year.
Yes.
I know you guys are going to be hosting the annual Suppliers Day coming up next month. That's a really big trade show for the industry. Could you tell us a little bit about that and the other things you have, like the Technology Transfer Office, like what it is and who should attend and why?
Right. Well, the Suppliers Day that we have goes back again to the 1980s. It started out small. When I was chairman the first time in the early 90s, it was still small. It was, in 1992, just an afternoon in a hotel ballroom. But over the course of the last 20 years, it's grown steadily to be as big as it can be. In other words, what we have now really is bursting the seams of what's possible. We had first gone to a convention center in the Meadowlands, which is sort of by Giant Stadium here.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved to the Expo Center in Edison, New Jersey, which is the biggest expo center that's in the state. We increased our time from one day to two, and then we completely filled the venue to the point where we even have to eat outside. I mean, in a fairly permanent tent that can be made outside the facility. But the entire inside of the biggest expo center in the state for 2 days is packed with suppliers. And we have, even with that, a waiting list of about 20 companies that would still like to get in.
Wow.
They come from other countries. We have a special area set up right now just for French companies. And not only is it free to attend for individuals, but we have free food. We have tried to make it almost a paperless thing. We've done a lot of things with web resources to make it as let's say eco-friendly as possible for,
mm-hmm.
for a show like this. So it's, in terms of foot traffic, as far as we can determine, the single biggest event in the cosmetic industry globally, which is a pretty wonderful thing for us. It also gives us resources to carry through a lot of good programs for the rest of the year, because we have money from suppliers, say, that we can then spend on other educational activities. And one of those activities that we started a few years ago is our Technology Transfer Conference, which this year will be on November 7th. The things that we do there are, first of all, to have some speakers, either from government, industry, academia, lawyers, speak about aspects of technology transfer, patents, and, you know, working with universities.
Mm-hmm.
Then we actively seek posters from university researchers. Last year we had, I think, somewhere between 30 and 40 posters, mostly from local universities like Rutgers and Columbia and Princeton, a few from as far away as let's say, the University of Southern Mississippi with Bob Lockhead's group. And then we give prizes. This year, I think we have set aside something like $18,000 for prizes for the best posters. So anyone who is an academic, we will pay their expenses to come to the meeting. We'll give prizes to the best posters. We're trying to make this another very major event for the New York area in a way that hasn't been done before, making this connection between the academic research and cosmetic and personal care applications. We've also taken this opportunity to get first-class keynote speakers. The first year, we had Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's the head of the Hyde Planetarium. He's on television with a program called Nova Science Now. He's been on The Daily Show, although Bill Maher. He's basically a celebrity astrophysicist.
Yeah, that was quite a coup, you guys getting him to speak.
So we had him year number one. Year number two, we had Bill Nye, the science guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Sure.
Year number three, we're going to have Michio Kaku. Now, I know probably if you watch television, if you watch programs like about the universe,
sure,
you're
going to
see him. He's like, obviously, it's like Japanese, but he has this long, straight hair.
The famous physicist, yeah.
He's at NYU. He's a co-founder of String Theory.
Uh-huh.
So he's going to be our speaker this year. So we've had now a lineup of, and a tradition of getting celebrity scientists to keynote the tech transfer meeting. Other things that we have coming up, in June, on June 27th, we have a seminar, a day-long meeting on Mel-Odor, and I'll be giving a talk there. In July, I think it's July 23rd, but I'm not quite sure, we have a meeting on professional development. Now, that's something that we started a few years ago. Normally, if you work in a big company, they may bring in outside consultants to give courses and different things that you need to function.
Mm-hmm.
In a corporate environment. They can be fairly expensive if you want to do them on your own. What we do is we bring in a selection of speakers. We have a day-long meeting, and the attendees get to pick some of these modules. We may be taking a day-long course and condensing it into a half a day to make it flow for the type of meeting that we're doing.
And these are not scientific.
No, they're not scientific. These are generalized, how you survive in business or some basic skills that you
right.
may need in your job.
The kind of business training that you wouldn't get in a university or in a college,
right.
The science people usually don't get.
Right. You have to, and that would be quite expensive if you didn't have it, within the SCC format.
Mm.
In August, August 15th, we have a day-long meeting on skin biochemistry. I believe that'll be instructed by Dr. Navid Dayan, who is our program chair right now. In September, we do have a fun thing, a culinary event where we cook something and eat it. I believe this year we might be expanding the format of that to have sort of a celebrity cook type person speak at the meeting. In October, we have a sun symposia, which is meant, in a sense, to be the off-year substitute for the famous sunscreen meeting that was held in Florida.
Right.
So we're covering the off-year with our own sun symposium. November will be the tech transfer meeting with Michio Kaku. One thing that you would notice if you followed the New York chapter over the years is that with this schedule, we don't have the traditional monthly meeting anymore. For many, many years, for 50 years, we would meet the first Wednesday of the month, and it would be a cocktail hour, dinner, and a speaker. And the next month, it would be a cocktail hour, a dinner, and a speaker. We have, over the course of time, been experimenting with these one-day seminars. And what we found is that our attendance is higher when we do a one-day seminar, and we attract different people and a different audience each time. So whereas in the old format, we had the same people every month attending, and mm-hmm. it was relatively limited attendance, by running these new meetings and having specific topics, we just, a month ago, had a meeting on rheology, and it was totally sold out. It was held at the Liberty Science Center, and we couldn't accommodate all the people that wanted to come to that meeting. In fact, planned to do another rheology meeting in 2 years because the demand was so great for it. So we find that these one-day, single-subject symposia that we're doing have been extremely popular, and it's basically taken over from the old way that we would traditionally run meetings. There is one thing, and I'm going to give you something that we're going to call it breaking news. It may or may not happen.
Okay.
But it's my dream, and I've started to lay the plans for it. Our Suppliers Day, as I've explained, is as big as things get.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what can you do with it? If you completely fill this place for 2 days, it's the biggest place you can have, what more can you possibly do? But for many years, we've discussed how we could hook some kind of educational meeting to this. As you know, many other meetings have a combination of like a Suppliers Day type of thing with a conference. And we were approached by an organization called CACPA. It's the Chinese American Cosmetic Professional Association. They've been around for about 10 years. Now, mm-hmm. The New York, New Jersey area for this industry is so big that there is a subgroup of just Chinese professionals there's enough of them, and they're in important enough positions that they have their own organization. And for most of this time, they were hiding out. they had their meetings, but they weren't really publicizing them. When they got to their 10th anniversary, they decided to come up a step. They opened dialogue with the SEC here. They invited our members to their 10th anniversary meeting, which is, I believe, the first one that I went to. And now we're trying to do some joint activity. And what we are looking at right now is to follow Suppliers Day 2013 with a 2-day conference on doing business in China, regulatory and business issues in China. I have penciled in, I haven't gotten approval on this, so you might have to edit it out.
Sure.
But I've entered into, or I have a tentative penciled in date with John Huntsman as a keynote speaker.
Wow.
Now, he was, of course, ambassador to China.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, relatively famous guy because he ran for president. He had been governor of Utah. And he speaks Mandarin. And I know he's free that day. We're penciled in. And I know what it involves to have him. And I'm going to try to, make things work around it. But what we try to do, and this is for the same reason that we would have a Bill Nye the Science Guy, is to, if we're doing something new, to anchor it with a high-profile keynote speaker so that when people look at the meeting that they've never heard of before, and then and in terms of this one, when you say, well, we're going to have a meeting about China, so what? Well, the keynote speaker is John Huntsman. And we're also going to explore bringing in people from the Chinese version of the FDA. It's called the SFFDA.
Right, right.
We are going to, during the summer, explore bringing over 2 or 3 people from China to speak at the meeting. So this, if we do it, would be like a major addition to what is already a huge event with Suppliers Day. So this is the biggest plan I have as chairman-elect, and it's what, you know, at the top of my agenda to pull off something that's a precedent setting for lifting us to a new level next year.
Well, it sounds like you have some great stuff going on at the NYSCC in this year and coming up next year, and we're really looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on, Steve. If someone wants to get in contact with you, what would be the best way?
Well, I have a bunch of email addresses, don't we all? I have 3. I have a website, which is www.stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, and a hyphen, Herman, H-E-R-M-A-N.com. If you go to that website, first of all, you can see all the things that I write, because I write a column for GCI Magazine, and they're all there. and other articles that I've written. But there is a way to email me through that site, to contact me through the email that way. Not only is that a good way to contact me, but it's also a good way to go and see, the other things I've been involved in.
Excellent. Well, we'll be sure to include a link in the show notes here. And we appreciate you coming on. Thanks for stopping by the program.
It's a pleasure always talking to you, and I hope to do it again someday.
Well, that's the end of our show. Thanks so much for listening. Just a couple of announcements. On May 12th and 13th, the New York SCC is having its Suppliers Day. This is a huge trade show where you will be able to meet all of the most significant raw material suppliers in the cosmetic industry. It's an excellent place for any cosmetic formulator to go to see what's new out there and also to meet a lot of the key players in the industry. Also, you can't beat the price. It's free for attendees. On May 30th, I will be teaching the SCC Continuing Education course, Beginning Cosmetic Chemistry. This is a one-day course where we go from start to finish about cosmetic chemistry. It's an excellent introduction for people to the industry. So if you're looking for a one-day live course for that subject, this is a great introductory course for you. This is going to take place in conjunction with the SCC mid-year meeting in Charleston, South Carolina. So go to the sconline.org website for more information. And on May 31st, I'll be giving a talk in Charleston about how you can use the internet to become a more productive cosmetic chemist. This is a morning session and promises to provide practical information that you can use right away. So please sign up, as it will benefit any cosmetic formulator, chemist, salesperson, or marketer. Finally, we have two new courses in the Complete Cosmetic Chemist series, including an advanced formula optimization and another course on the physiology of skin. Our instructors are Dr. Stephen Abbott and Dr. Zoe Adrelius. They are both excellent courses, and I highly recommend you try them out. If you've already taken the introductory beginning cosmetic chemistry course, either one of these will be excellent add-ons to that base. Well, that's all we have. Thanks so much for listening. Now, go make a difference.